On Wednesday, December 6th, the President of the United States formally recognized Jerusalem as the capital city of Israel, breaking with more than 60 years of official U.S. policy. Why did this happen? What does it mean? And what might happen next? To respond to the urgency of this moment, Unsettled is trying something new, a miniseries. We're bringing you short episodes featuring experts and activists, each with a different perspective on the new status of Jerusalem. On December 19th, our producer Emily Bell spoke to Lina Delasha, assistant professor of history at Humboldt State University, who is currently living in Shuafat neighborhood of East Jerusalem, working on her book manuscript, Contested Citizenship, Nazareth's Palestinians in the Transition from British Mandate to Israel. Heads up, you might hear the audio cut out a bit here and there.
So it's been almost 2 weeks since Donald Trump's announcement, and since you've been living in Jerusalem since the summer, can you say a little bit about what the attitudes are like on the ground in response to Trump's announcement? And also if this is different maybe from attitudes in the international community or outside of Israel-Palestine?
Well, it's mostly very similar to most of the world, except for, you know, Trump and his supporters. There's a lot of resentfulness, and there's a lot of rejection of the political statement. Honestly, I think, at least as I see it, the reality has not changed, and it's not going to change anytime soon on the ground. The reality on the ground is of occupation, and it will not. If Trump calls it the capital of Israel, that's not going to change anything. Jerusalem is really not one city, it's two cities, and it's very segregated. It's visibly noticeable that this is two cities. Anyone who's ever been to Jerusalem might have been in denial about it, but you could definitely visibly understand if you're in an Arab neighborhood or if you're in a Jewish neighborhood. So this artificial statement, which fits into Trump and Netanyahu's worldview, has nothing to do with reality. But at the same time, the declarative value has been extremely offensive to people. The idea that the U.S. now comes out clearly and basically drops all pretenses of unbiased broker of peace. It basically, this statement says the U.S. is going to support Israel no matter what, in maintaining its occupation, in oppressing the Palestinian people, in actually making occupation into a stronger reality. And this is why people are out in the street. This is why people are resentful. This is why people are protesting in various ways, mostly nonviolent demonstrations. There hasn't been almost any use of weapons on the Palestinian side. That, of course, doesn't apply for Israel. Israel has been very fiercely suppressing Palestinian forms of resistance. Several people have been killed and injured. People's lives have been severely affected by Israeli responses to the protests, the legitimate protests that actually the UN today has approved of. Except for the US, the major forces in the world think that the Trump declaration is not acceptable.
So from your perspective as a historian and a Palestinian citizen of Israel, I guess, what does Jerusalem mean to you?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I think everyone has been ignoring is that Jerusalem is the city, is the people of Jerusalem. This is really what the city is about. Yes, there are the holy places. Yes, there's stones and ancient history. That actually is a history of everyone. There's actually a very long Muslim Arab history in Jerusalem that is kind of being wiped out. On the ground also, I mean, Israel has systematically been erasing Palestinian history and traces from the city. The synagogue at Mamila, which now is the site for the very ironically named Museum of Tolerance, which Israel built on top of an ancient Muslim cemetery, is just one example of what this city has gone through. But the much more severe effect is felt by the people of every day. Jerusalem has hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who have lived under occupation since 67. They've lived in a city that has been rejecting and pushing them out since day one. This thing that is called Unified Jerusalem, quote unquote, is actually Jerusalem and 28 other Palestinian villages, which Israel annexed together in 67 and declared it to be Greater Jerusalem. That picture of the finger, if you've ever seen that map, that's not Jerusalem. That's a whole much larger area that was basically drawn on a very simple basis, maximum territory, minimum population. So the lines were basically meant to annex as much as possible of Palestinians' lands and keep as many Palestinians out of it. And this policy has continued throughout the years since 67. Israel has basically sought very, very strongly and did everything possible to prevent the Palestinians from becoming a larger percentage of the city. And it has done that through very severe restrictions on construction, on Palestinians' ability to expand. So Palestinian towns have not had zoning area plans, which means that building a house in East Jerusalem is so hard. Getting a permit is basically jumping through hoops and hoops and hoops, and even then you're not necessarily going to get a permit. Other areas are designated as green areas, quote unquote, which basically means areas that are now kept until a settlement is going to build there, and several of those have happened. Israel has also given the Palestinian Jerusalemites a what is called permanent residency, which is basically a very, very fragile status. That means that's basically a status that an immigrant gets, that a visitor gets. Even though it's called permanent residency, it's actually a very easy thing to revoke. And Israel, over the past few decades, have revoked tens of thousands of residencies, basically expelling Palestinians from Jerusalem and preventing them access to their city. In addition to all these, Israel has both disconnected the Jerusalem from the West Bank, which is its natural continuation culturally, economically, politically. And at the same time, it's actually also fragmenting East Jerusalem from within itself through the use of the wall. If you look at the map of the wall, it's basically encapsulating communities within it, preventing them access to anything. Basically, some of those places are encircled almost completely. If you look at Aram, it basically used to be, when I lived in Jerusalem, I used to be a political activist, and one of the organizations that resisted the wall, Ta'ayush, which is an Arab Jewish partnership. And when I was still here, there was a street in the middle of Aram that basically separated two neighborhoods, and now there's a wall where literally in the middle of where the street used to stand, preventing thousands and thousands of Jerusalem residents from basically getting into the city. Israel doesn't even treat it as the capital of Israel. Israel doesn't want the Palestinians, it wants the city. And that basically means if you accept that premise, you accept depopulation of hundreds of thousands of people or forcing them to live in ghettos. And that's not a moral stand that anyone should be backing.
So you've just described the extremely harrowing and incredibly problematic realities of decades of occupation in terms of the tangible impact on the lives of thousands of people that are living in Jerusalem every day. So do you think that Trump's announcement is largely symbolic? Do you think that it will have any kind of tangible impact on the daily lives of people living in Jerusalem?
The one thing that actually could be dangerous is that the Israeli government could take it as a green light to undertake more aggressive means against the Palestinians, more oppression, more settlements. It has been a consistent pattern of the Netanyahu government to expand settlements basically whenever they have a chance, whenever they feel like they can get away with it. And this is one of those moments where this could actually be a side effect. So the embassy is not really going to move anytime soon, but Israeli leaders could take it as a hint that the U.S. will not attempt to stop them from any expansionist plans or any further oppression of the Palestinians.
So simultaneous to the potential actions of the Israeli government from an organizing perspective or a Palestinian organizing perspective specifically, do you think that this announcement is a watershed moment that could lead to a significant increase in organizing and resistance to the long-held status quo?
Honestly, no, I'm not very optimistic right now. I mean, there is, this year has been very volatile in Jerusalem. A few months ago, after the shooting in Al-Aqsa Mosque, Israel tried to post electronic gates to the Aqsa, and there was a huge wave of resistance to that, and that actually made Israel back down. So resistance to the occupation is a part of daily reality for the Palestinians in the city. But there's also a lot of reluctance right now because people are just not seeing the point. They kind of understand that Jerusalem is going to be Palestinian. The Palestinians are not going anywhere, and they're going to continue fighting their rights and for their city and for living proper lives and getting their rights. But I don't think that, I think this is a wave, what we're noticing now. I think one of the main differences is going to be that for anyone who has ever thought the U.S. is an honest broker that actually seeks to establish peace, this is right now the proof. And I want to highlight here that it's not a new thing. The U.S. has never been an honest broker. The U.S. has always undermined Palestinians' rights and ability to have a free state, to have self-determination. The difference now is that the U.S. can't even claim neutrality anymore. The U.S. has now basically said, we don't even care about the appearance of neutrality. And the one thing that I am hoping this will result in, similar to what happened today in the UN, is that other parties in the world will actually take up the task of brokering a real just solution, one that actually says Israel cannot continue in its oppressive policies. Israel cannot gain from a legal occupation, which is counter to all international norms and law, and it cannot be allowed to actually just get away with all these violations of international law anymore.
So for many American Jews, the information about the realities of East Jerusalem, or even the fact that the old city is actually in East Jerusalem, like those things are not necessarily talked about or included in education about Jerusalem. And so what would you want people who maybe for the first time are hearing about the realities of East Jerusalem specifically, as well as the broader occupation as a result of this announcement, what would you want those people to know about Jerusalem or East Jerusalem or the situation on the ground?
I would want them to critically engage all their ideas about what Israel is and who the Palestinians are. And the first step, I think, is to actually humanize Palestinians. It is to get over this idea that they're some kind of fanatic terrorist monsters who are out there to kill Jews for no reason. No, there's actually a reality behind it, a very long reality behind it that doesn't even start in 67. It starts in 48 when the Palestinians basically lost their homeland. 750,000 Palestinians were turned into refugees by the acts of the Zionist militias and the Israeli state. And that's the first stop. And then 67, Israel depopulated more Palestinians, including in the Jerusalem area. So this is where we start the story. The story starts in basically the dispossession of a people that then goes on to demonizing those people. So when you want to think about Jerusalem, think about those people who've lived there for generations and generations. They pay full taxes, but the services they receive from the Jerusalem municipality are minimal. You can come and see my neighborhood, and you kind of basically see the street kind of ends all of a sudden, like this, like, you know, pavements and paved roads and everything, and all of a sudden you're walking in a half-paved road with no sidewalks, no maintenance, no cleaning, no services, basically, you know, not any basic decent level of services. So if you want to believe that this is a city, come and be here, but actually be here. You know, part of what happens when people come to Jerusalem is that the Palestinians become invisible. You never look back, look to the other side. You never think about the people who are on the other side. So if you want to really learn what Jerusalem is and what happens here, come here and go to both sides. Come here and talk to Palestinians. Try to actually explore how the city looks like. Try to understand where the lines are drawn. What I would like for people to come and see that this line is based on a policy of oppression. It is not because the Palestinians are the ultimate other, essentially different from, you know, the us, the American, the Jew, the American, the Westerner, right? It's because those are people who are under occupation and under oppression, but they are also people who are maintaining their humanity every day in face of incredible challenges. And if you're here, then make sure to acknowledge that humanity. And if you're not here, then make sure that you learn about it and then go teach other people. The reality is the Palestinians are a victim of a very, very long process of dispossession that needs to be remedied. And it has to start, I think, in the U.S.
Unsettled is produced by Emily Bell, Asaf Calderon, Yoshi Fields, Max Friedman, and me. This episode was edited by Alana Levinson. Original music by Nat Rosenzweig. Get more information and listen to previous episodes at our website, unsettledpod.com. And be sure to stay tuned for the next episode of our Jerusalem mini-series. In the meantime, don't forget to follow Unsettled on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And most importantly, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode of Unsettled.